Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. Hey, keep in mind, we're streaming live on biz1190.com, and today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com, so check us out there, along with all the other programs you might want to check out there. Here on Driven to Business, we enjoy talking to a variety of people. Our guest today is a very good friend of mine. It's Larry Schrader. Larry and I actually work together at EMA, which you can go to emainc.net and take a look at our company there. But we also have been friends in many other areas. And besides that, Larry is a very, very experienced real estate person here in the Atlanta area. Larry, welcome to Driven to Business.
Well, thank you very much, Eddie. Proud to be here.
Larry, you're one of the guys I know that has firsthand experience with a market collapse, and when the real estate market here in Atlanta collapsed, you were right in the middle of all that. Tell us a little bit about what that was like.
Well, in fact, Eddie, I had been using real estate since 1983 as a source of income. I started out part-time in that business as an investor, and I bought houses all the way through 89, and I had bought enough property that I felt like I didn't need anymore. So I got my real estate license and went to work with, first of all, Coldwell Banker for about a year. Then I'd met Stacy Burton at REMAX Northeast. And after a year with Coldwell Banker, I went to work with REMAX there. But during that time, I never quit being an investor. Continued to acquire properties. And I would go through dips where the economy would go down, but it came back in a hurry. And I was able to have things lined up. I felt like I had myself really protected with diversity within the real estate market, with some lease purchases that I had sold. I had owner financed some properties. I had rentals. I had some mobile home parks in my company and five-star properties. And I felt like I was pretty well shielded from any bad thing, because if one thing's going bad, there's something else going okay.
Right.
But this last collapse, I'll call it, that we went through, it was prolonged, and by the time I used up all my cash, I had to find some other ways to make money.
This caught almost all of us, I think, living in this area off guard. You know, when I moved to Atlanta from Texas, of course, had an oil economy and a boom economy out there. Well, Atlanta had an economy here. I don't think that I realized how much of the Atlanta economy was driven by real estate until that happened. It caught me off guard. Did that catch you off guard? Did you realize how much real estate drove?
Well, I did not, because I was in the middle of it, enjoying it, making my profit off of it and putting together something I thought was good for years to come and into retirement age. But then when I realized what all it affected when it started going down, I did come to the realization that there are a lot more things connected to the real estate business than I had realized prior to that.
Exactly. I mean, if just as a small example, you know, we saw a lot of banks get in big trouble here in Georgia. We saw, you and I both know a lot of guys that I think we would have, I won't name their names, but guys I think we would have called pretty high rollers that all of a sudden were not rolling so high anymore. In fact, some of them even all the way to the bankruptcy.
Right.
I don't think any of us saw that coming like it did. But, you know, it's a funny thing when that happens. All of a sudden now everyone gets very pessimistic. And even when things begin to turn around, the pessimism is still there. And I sometimes think we're kind of like that now still. There's maybe an undue pessimism over real estate now that shouldn't be there.
Well, I think many people hang on to the ways of doing business in the past, and
right.
And many times they say, well, I'm just going to hold on and it'll come back, and that's not going to happen. Things have changed so much that it will never be like it was, either in real estate or all the other businesses that were impacted so
right.
much by the change in the economy.
You know, you and I, talking about change, we've talked a lot about this, you and I have, about the idea that anybody in business, whether you want to accept change or not, you're going to accept change because it's going to happen. And I just think that it's a hard thing for us to swallow at times. Talk to us about that a little bit.
Well, I think many times that it can catch us by surprise. And one of the things that I've always tried to do is have the mental mindset that nothing is devastating if we'll take a few steps back and analyze it and adjust our plan or adjust our route, if you will. I think that many times people can get down, and if they're not surrounding themselves with the right kind of people, they can stay down. And in fact, if you look around, particularly this city of metropolitan Atlanta, there are so many opportunities. If you just look at what's going on and how it can help you in what you want to do, we can always find it. I think the positive side of things that happen are there. Sometimes we don't recognize it as quickly as other times.
You know, that's one of the lessons I think I've learned in my life is that opportunities are always there in downsides. They're hard to see. Like I've told you this before, but when I was in Texas in the early 1980s, I think either 1980 or 81, when this is hard to think about this now, but oil went down to something like $8 a barrel, which is just hard to even imagine that. And it literally turned the town of Houston off. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. Just things that were booming. It just like literally like someone flipped a light switch. I've never seen anything like it. And people were going out of business right and left and crying and this and that. And the two entrepreneurs that I worked for out there, they went around buying up the electrical houses for drilling rigs at a time when the banks had foreclosed all of them and would give them away for literally pennies on the dollar. And people thought they were crazy for doing that. But their thought was, look, we're not going to stop using oil. Mm-hmm. At some point, this comes back. And real estate's like that. We're not going to start living in the street. We're going to live somewhere. And businesses are going to be in buildings somewhere. We're not going to be working out of an open field somewhere or something like that. And when it did come back, these guys made tons of money, but it was because they saw opportunities when everyone else was running. I heard a guy this morning talk about one investment technique is to find hated stocks. Find a stock everybody hates and look hard at it. Occasionally, that's your best bargain if everybody else hates it. That's really what you're saying in a way about looking at it. There are opportunities hidden in the malaise around here.
Right. And exactly, sometimes it might cause you to add to, and I believe that any knowledge you have, when you apply it, it becomes wisdom, and sometimes it causes you to add to your knowledge and learn some areas perhaps that you're not familiar with. But one thing that is never taken away from us is our experience.
Right.
We always have that.
You know, Larry, I had Sue Miley as a guest here a few weeks ago, and Sue writes a business blog, is a business consultant, is a very sharp business lady. And one of the things that I originally got in touch with her, I read a blog she wrote about what to do when business is slow, and I found it a very interesting blog. And without going into all of that, one of the things that she said in there is that you shouldn't allow yourself to get depressed when business is slow. But that's a real tendency to do exactly that. And the problem is, as she put it, if you allow yourself to get depressed and sort of just draw into yourself, you're not going to get out of that being slow. It's kind of like you can't, if to use a baseball analogy, you have to hit your way out of a slump. You can't, there's no other way out of it.
Right. Yeah, I think many times when things start to go the wrong direction and you sort of lose control, nothing you can do to get it back on track, you start thinking about self-isolation.
Right.
Many times. You don't even want to be around people.
Exactly.
Because you feel like things are not going right for you, and you don't even want to talk about it. And that is the wrong thing to do. I think, it like I mentioned a while ago, being around the right kind of people can not only enhance your knowledge of what's going on, but it can make you feel a lot better, and at the same time make you more creative as God meant us to be as we come up with new ideas.
And you and I, we've also talked about this a lot of times along with some of our other friends. The idea of being around positive and encouraging people, it really cannot be understated or overstated, I should say. You can't overstate how important that is, in, because we are, as the Bible says, iron sharpens iron, and you know, as we are around each other, and maybe I'm down and you're not, and or even together, we can perhaps look at a situation in a more realistic sense and encourage one another through that and help us perhaps to see opportunities, even in our own lives and our own business, that we're not seeing because we are depressed about it. And we're so, we have our heads so buried in the sand, and so we're so dirty and gritty from fighting that we don't see it. But that again, I know you've been a big preacher of this for a long time, the idea of encouragement.
Yes. Yeah, and I think there's so many people today, and possibly not as many today as there was this time last year, because
right.
I do think things here in Atlanta are looking up economically.
Right, right.
But we continue to have the opportunity to really influence other people to a better way of thinking. And I think it doesn't take long when you're around someone to understand their mindset. And to me, I think the Lord has given us a positive attitude or enabled us to realize strength to where we really, really can help people with an attitude adjustment, if you will. I think Zig Ziglar says thinking.
Right.
That some people have, and I just prefer not to have any part of that.
It's funny you should mention Zig. I was thinking of the same thing when you just even thinking about you and the way you encourage a lot of people. You do a lot of that, and that was his big deal. Not positive, silly thinking where you say things are good when they're not. That's ridiculous. But you know, again, there are silver linings to every dark cloud, and you either have the chance of just sitting back and drawing in all your feelers and just sitting there, and it's going to get worse if you do that. It's not going to get better. Most things do not fix themselves in that regard. And, you know, there's another great Zig saying that I say a lot, and that is that, you know, no one ever stumbles over anything sitting down. I think that's always a great Zig saying. Zig passed away here not too long ago, and I think a great loss. I've always enjoyed going to hear him. You are listening to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. More to come with Larry Schrader in just a moment, so stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Keep in mind, we're streaming live on biz1190.com. Tell your friends also today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. And as I'm continually learning all over the web as well, I'm always having someone tell me they heard me on some site I never heard of, but that's fine that they're doing that. We appreciate it. We're also here with our producer, Isaac, and he's doing a great job today. Larry, before we leave the subject of slowdown, one of the things that Sue talked about in her blog and that I've talked about with you before and I've talked about with many other people in almost any environment, any organization you're talking about, whether it's a church or a business or anything else, a lot of times when things get slow, we begin doing things that we should have been doing when we were flying high, and instead we don't. I wonder why we don't do that.
Well, I think it's natural that when things are going good, we get a little lazy. And
right.
The self-discipline, though, of the routine of doing the same thing in all times is something a lot of people do not have. The self-discipline to go out and start your own company, for instance. A lot of people don't have that. And they had much rather somebody be telling them what to do next. Where we that understand that you got to get up every morning and put together activity that's going to be productive to accomplish the goals that we've got for that day. And even though I'm not a big deal, I don't think about it like I used to, of writing down weekly goals and monthly goals and annual goals, that things change so fast now that those goals can be disappointing. We have to just be sure we're self-disciplined enough to stay on track with the things that accomplish what is necessary to be productive and be successful.
Larry, you are in. You and I work together at EMA. You primarily do commercial sales there, selling variable frequency drives, soft starters, and so forth to, and control systems to commercial accounts like commercial buildings, like all the tall buildings down here in Atlanta and all around the town here. You're also still very much in the real estate business, and we want to talk about that a little bit too. But let's talk about for a moment the changes that we've seen take place in the in our market there at EMA, the selling to, because I think it's what we've seen happen is not that uncommon, perhaps different in the details, but the ways it's changed are very similar to the way most businesses have changed recently, and you just have to adjust. Talk to us about those changes.
Well, I think when I first started with the EMA, the prices had come down on the variable frequency drives, but they still were not as important as they are today to the people that own the buildings. And by that, I'm thinking about the energy efficiency that these drives right. provide. A lot of people had not gone to the expense to make the variable frequency drives part of their systems. And I think now it is becoming more obvious that it's more important to save the electricity or the power bills. And in fact, Georgia Power now is offering a rebate
right.
for those variable frequency drive purchasers.
Most states are doing that, but Georgia has particularly got a nice program going on. I think it's like $50 a horsepower or something, which is very, very nice.
Yeah. And that in itself enables us to go out to sites even and maybe have a breakfast and learn, take some chicken
right.
biscuits or get pizza for lunch and learns and educate people on exactly what the variable frequency drive does and the way it plays into their system along with the energy savings. And then they recognize the cost is not what it used to be, and it's a practical thing for them to do.
Larry, you know, the other thing is when I first, when we first began here back in 1988 here in Atlanta, a lot of our business was service business, and it was repairing. And I know a lot of you listening out there probably don't know what a variable frequency drive is, so just kind of stay with me through this. We're not talking about the technology particularly. But these units, they were quite expensive, as Larry said, more than they are now. And consequently, smaller horsepower units is something you could repair. And our company made a lot of money, and a lot of our revenue over time was repairing those smaller units. Well, now, if you could sort of make an analogy to a computer, where if you a few years ago you paid a lot more money for a lot less computer than you get now. And what is happening is the prices have dropped. They're not repairable. They become sort of commodities. I don't ever use the term throwaway, but they're not worth fixing. You in a smaller horsepower, you get another one. Now, we still do a lot of service business, but it's in higher horsepower. But that's an adjustment our company had to make because that was a big revenue stream for us. And like everybody else, you either sit around and bemoan the change that you can do nothing about, or you take advantage of it and you redirect yourself into another way of revenue stream, and you look at the market and you redirect yourself. And we've had to do that in our business, just like you've had to do it in real estate in a way. Now, talk to us, Larry, about the real estate side of this for a few minutes, because you've been in sales and management a long time, starting, I don't know where you started. I know you were at JCPenney's for a while, one of their managers, and then you've been in real estate and are still in real estate. To tell us about that.
Yeah, the last 30 years or so, I've been in the real estate. I started out as an investor buying houses and then got my license. I'm currently with Virtual Properties Realty out in Duluth. And what that business has done over the last several years in creating opportunities not only in the residential area but commercial also, the Atlanta market has so much going on that it's good for businesses here. And when I say going on, I'm talking about new businesses coming into the area.
Right.
We're talking about new developments, enlarging locations, just a lot of things that are very positive for the economy here.
You know, a lot of people don't realize that Georgia, and I lose track of which magazines these are, I'll be quite honest about it, there's so many. But of many of the magazines that track these kinds of things, Georgia is one of the number one places in the country to start or to move a business to. I mean, there are many others too, other good states too. But we do have a lot of new business starts here in Georgia. But for a commercial real estate person like you, or anyone wanting to invest in commercial real estate, that represents opportunities.
It does indeed, because one of the things that is encouraging for people to move here is the price of real estate.
Right.
It's still considerably less than any other metropolitan cities around the nation.
Right.
So you're talking about less on real estate, commercial prices, and you're talking about less on home prices.
Right.
Even though we've seen it stabilize now and maybe edge up a little bit, it's still super competitive if a person is looking for a place to start their life and their career. Atlanta is a great option.
You know, recently you and I heard Malcolm Gladwell speak, and we both read his book about tipping points, and he talks about in there that we may be re-entering the era of the word of mouth. Larry, in about 1 minute, because we're running into a break here. How do you, just tell us about, you're a big relationship person. Tell us about the importance of relationships.
Well, I think that's got to be the priority thing, whether you're selling, whether you're doing ministry, or whatever you're doing. A trust between individuals to start a relationship really trumps everything else that you're trying to do.
Exactly. And you know, Larry, I question sometimes, Gladwell's premise that we're re-entering the era of word of mouth. I'm not sure we ever lost it. And
correct.
I've used example many times here on the program about if I were looking for a place to eat lunch, and Isaac here, who works every day here, told me about a restaurant that I should go to, I'm much, much more likely to go to that restaurant because Isaac said it than I am some advertisement I saw somewhere. And that's the essence of word of mouth. And all of us in business, that is great advertising, is this: when someone else tells someone about your business, or if someone's looking to invest in commercial real estate and they give them Larry Schrader's name, that trumps any advertising you can do anywhere, or any business cards you can hand out, or anything. And again, it's the relationships, and trust is a great word. Just the idea that we do have to get that trust down and get people to believe what we say. And you know, the one way to have people believe what you say is to do what you say you're going to do. I mean, the way you get trust is to be trustworthy. You are listening to Driven to Business. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on Atlanta's Biz 1190 WAFS. So join us every week, and we'll have plenty more to come. Don't go anywhere with a break. Be back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. We're glad you're here. We're talking to Larry Schrader. Larry is a commercial sales account manager with EMA and is also a commercial and residential real estate person here in Atlanta area. So, and by the way, you can reach Larry if you'll go to, the easiest way to do it probably is to go to the show website, which is eddiemayfield.com, or go to EMA's site, EMAINC.net, and just use any of the contact methods on there and say, hey, need to talk to Larry, and they'll get information right to him and he can get back with you. Let's talk about sales. You've been in sales a long time. Peter Burke, a sales consultant here in the Atlanta area, talks about, he has a book called Unselling, and in there he kind of warns against what a lot of salespeople do, which is a lot of us sort of term the show up and throw up sales method. And he contrasts that with a very different type of sales method that I know you use, because I've been with you on sales calls. Talk to us about it.
Well, you know, I think back, Eddie, to when I was working part-time with JCPenney in Chattanooga in the auto center there. And as you said that, I thought of a time that I actually had a canned speech that I gave a guy the pitch on the tires. And there was one evening there that I was talking about those tires, and I realized that I wasn't even conscious of who I was talking to, and it concerned me because I know when you're that mechanical that you don't have the feelings in it, and I stopped that canned speech. And I started listening more to what they needed, what kind of miles they drove each year and what kind of roads they traveled on, to try to fit them into the right tire. And while I was doing that part-time, I went full-time on their management program when I got out of school, and then came to Atlanta with J.C. Penney when we opened the store at North Lake Mall. I left there. I went to work for a doctor as a business manager over a group of medical clinics. And part of what I was doing was actually meeting the human resource people or the owner of companies and explaining how McGraw Industrial Clinics could meet their medical needs, whether it be for physicals. And here again, I found out what their needs were first and then told them how we could provide those needs. I think today with you at EMA, Eddie, it's the same thing. You got to listen more than you talk,
right,
in order to be able to figure out how we can build that relationship we talked about earlier.
You know, people, many people have said this, including Peter and many, many other folks we talked to. You know, people do like to buy. They do not like to be sold. I was reading, I reread Huckleberry Finn here last year just to, because I hadn't read it in a long time. I just wanted to, sort of a discipline of reading. I decided to do it again. And I found something interesting in there. When there was a time when Huck was with these two other characters and they were swindling townspeople. And when the townspeople realized it had been swindled, they all started running around yelling, "Sold! We've been sold!" Well, the idea of being sold is being swindled. And that is in people's minds. They think that.
Yeah.
You know, I think you're in a, you know, sometimes we're in a store, even if we go there to buy something and a salesperson walks up and says, "Can I help you?" We have an immediate response. "No, thanks. I'm just," even if you in fact came there to buy
exactly
something,
right.
You don't want to be sold. You came to buy, you don't want to be sold. And I think any of us in sales better keep that in mind when you're talking to people, is that they might like to buy. They do not want you selling them anything. So your job is, like you said, help them identify their needs. You may, in a technical field like we're in, the odds are very good that we may know more about what they need than they know, but then it comes back to this trust thing. You have to gain their trust by being trustworthy and not selling them something they don't need, but in fact helping them. And that's part of that whole consultative sales process, isn't it?
It is indeed. In fact, many people do not know they have the need that we know they've got if they don't have
right
our equipment. And in a conversation, we can certainly find that out. I can remember a gentleman I sat across from him on the desk, and he says, "Why have I not known about EMA before?" And I said, "Well, James, that's the reason I'm here."
You know?
So that type of relationship can indeed cause them to say, "Man, I wish I had known about this earlier." Well, you didn't, so let's start from right now.
Larry, those of us that know you well, we know you as a good business person. We also know you in another side of you. You and another gentleman that's actually been a guest here on Driven to Business, Heinz Wagner. You guys started a Christian business gathering many years ago that's still meeting. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, in fact, that's the Norcross Fellowship Luncheon. We use the letters NFL and haven't gotten in trouble. The closest I got to trouble on that was a big guy came wandering in when we were meeting one time, and he said, "Is there an NFL meeting here?" And I said, "Yes, sir," as I looked up at him. And he said, "Well, you don't look like an NFL player." And it turns out he's Mike McCoy. And he of course, was an All-American at Notre Dame. And
Mike is still a big guy.
He is. He is indeed. He was first-round draft choice for Green Bay. But
right.
But Mike became part of that meeting and is there on a regular basis with us. And what we found out through Full Gospel Businessmen's Fellowship, way back in the early 80s, the late 70s, was a group of men would get together on a regular basis and share their Christian testimony. And many times through that Christian testimony, a man would resonate with what was being said in a far different way than they would from a preacher preaching
right
a sermon.
Right.
And we started a luncheon, and it was actually a Full Gospel Luncheon. And there was a time that we realized that we did not need to be a Full Gospel Luncheon, and that's when we adopted the name of Norcross Fellowship Luncheon. We're currently meeting in Duluth, and we did not change the name. It's still NFL, Norcross Fellowship Luncheon. We're meeting at the Golden Corral each Wednesday at noon. The meeting lasts an hour. It's over by 1 o'clock. That's 3270 Satellite Boulevard each Wednesday at noon. We have been doing that for almost 30 years. God's blessing has really been on it. We've heard from a lot of people. We've had some high-powered speakers, political speakers. We've had a lot of athletes share their testimony, and we've had the regular person that goes to work every day share his testimony, because we Christians know that that's an important part of our life when we go through the conversion. And
you know, in fact, you don't have people in full-time ministry give their testimonies there, do you?
That's exactly right. That's one of the things that's caused us to be distinctly different, is not using anybody that's in the full-time ministry.
You know, there's the old joke about the guy that goes up and tells the preacher, said, you know, well, you know, you're being paid to be good, but I'm good for nothing. Larry's maybe a loaded question in a way, but putting your business hat back on for a moment, but do good moral Christian practices always coincide with good business practices?
Eddie, they do for me.
Yeah.
But because I don't have a different option.
Right.
There are other people that do have different options, but it's because they've got the wrong motive. They got the wrong goal in mind.
Right.
I've got a friend that calls it the green eye, making the money becomes the most important thing to them. But for me, I find that if I'm involved with people that have the priorities wrong like that, I'm not involved with them very long.
You know, I think it, on one level, I do understand what you're saying. There are unquestionably people that have gained wealth through illegitimate means. We all know about them. Occasionally we hear about them going to prison and so forth. But, you know, on a day-in and day-out basis, the people that I know in business, and these are not all people that you go to church with or anything either. These are just general people you meet in business, have businesses. Most good business people practice good moral standards, because if you're going to be in business a long time, it goes back to that trust, particularly in the age of communication that we live in, and where you know if you've got a restaurant that's cheating people, well, it shows up on some of these rating websites or so forth, and people stop going to see you. I mean, particularly younger people, they look at that. It's the first thing they look at is, what does it say about you on Yelp? Well, if you've got a terrible attitude on Yelp, you don't go there. I think eBay is an astonishing thing to me in business. You know, eBay is a self-regulating kind of deal where you go on there and you buy and sell things. Well, both the sellers and the buyers are rated by the sellers and the buyers, you know. And so every time you buy something from somebody, you rate if that guy gave you what you paid for, and if he delivered what he said, and if the description was accurate, and all that kind of stuff. And he does the same for you. Did the guy pay? Did he make unreasonable demands on me? And, you know, if you don't have a good rating, I know when I'm going to buy something on eBay, the first thing I look at is the seller's rating. If a guy's got a poor rating, I'm not going to buy it from him. I'm just not going to do that. I'll pay a little more and go to some guy that's got a higher rating. I think that in an overall, that I know that's hard to put that in a moral context, but really that's morals. It's just saying you're going to do what you said you're going to do. And so I think those practices, I think in many ways, those what I would term Christian values do in fact coincide with very good business. And I think that's a great example of it is the eBay situation.
I agree. In fact, I don't think there's anybody get up, well, I shouldn't say anybody, but most people do not get up in the morning and say, well, I'm going to go out and see who I can take advantage of today. In fact, in the real estate business, even as a real estate investor, I never went out to try to buy something from someone that would leave them in worse shape.
Right.
I had to find the situations where they needed to sell the property and they were willing to sell it at a certain price, and that was a good enough price for me. And those situations exist in business everywhere, and we don't need to take advantage of anyone. We don't need to take the risk of getting on the bad list, as you said.
No, we don't. But you know, at the same time, Larry, we talk about this often. Any business, whether it's, you know, any business, whether it's this radio station here, or our business at EMA, or your real estate business, we should get a fair price for what we do. There's nothing immoral about charging a good price and making a profit. I mean, without that, we couldn't pay our employees, we couldn't pay the rent, we couldn't do anything. So, you know, it doesn't mean that you give everything away.
Correct.
In order to be a good moral person in business, it just means that when someone buys something from you, they're getting what they paid for. They're getting value for it, and you're not cheating them, and you're standing behind it, and your word means something. And I think that is so important to stay with that. I want to talk a little more. We have one more segment with Larry here. We want to talk about a couple things like perhaps giving, what we think about that, get a little bit of an insight from Larry about what the future's possibly going to hold for him and what he may think. And lots more to come here on Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here, and we will be back shortly. Hang around. Welcome back to the final segment of Driven to Business. I always say the time flies by. We hope you're enjoying the program. I know we're enjoying it. Our guest today is Larry Schrader. Larry, you and I recently heard a very interesting guy talk, Randall Wallace. He was the I didn't know who he was until we heard him speak, actually. Randall Wallace is the his ancestor was William Wallace, of whom the movie Braveheart was about. And Randall actually wrote the screenplay and was nominated for an Oscar for that movie. He also did the movie Secretariat and wrote the screenplay for We Were Soldiers and a number of other very good movies that I really like. But I could not have called his name. He had an interesting talk, and one of the things that he said, as a fairly well-to-do, successful Hollywood writer and producer, he talked about the joy of giving, which is a subject I didn't really expect to hear him talk about. And he said he particularly enjoyed being a secret giver, where you give things and people don't even know that you did it. You've done a lot of that too. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, in fact, it's the gratification that we have within from being able to contribute to people's better being, if you will. You know, many times it can be money, but other times it can be things we help them with, whether it's donating our knowledge, if you will, to help them out of situations. It could be spending the time that it takes to help people through the down business situations that we've talked about earlier. It's really an appreciation of knowing that we can give unselfishly of time, money, right, and knowing that we're going to be better because of it, and that it comes back to us, but that's not the reason we give.
But, you know, you made an interesting point. Giving is not just time, is it? I mean, it's not just money, is it?
That's right, yeah. You know, time is probably one of our most coveted things.
It is.
We have... just a certain amount. Nobody has any more than 24 hours in a day. And how we use that and how we allocate it is strictly up to us. And that's where a lot of people cannot find time to give time to important things and important people. And here I'm talking about important people being those people that may be down, like
right,
we talked about, depressed, or need an encouraging word, or need to have a cup of coffee with some thoughts that will get them on a different track.
You know, Larry, I hear over and over, I've had a lot of very successful business people on here as guests on Driven to Business, and when I'll ask them what's been the most rewarding part of their career or what have they enjoyed doing the most, almost without exception, they will say it has something to do with relationships and with helping other people. Particularly older business guys will say, what I really get a kick out of is seeing these young guys that I have helped along do well in business, or perhaps a guy was having a family problem, and as an older guy, I was able to help him out and sort of give him some advice, and he was able to mend that situation, and that's very rewarding. And I do think that perhaps the most rewarding thing we do in this life, when you begin to measure life at the end, you don't measure it by how much stuff you've got stuffed away somewhere. It does come down to relationships, is where it really comes down to.
It does, and the impact that you have on others' lives, sometimes you don't realize it until they may let you know a little later. It could be just a word that changed their thinking.
Right.
It could just be a thought that made them realize that they're looking in the wrong direction.
Larry, I'm not saying we're old, but...
Thank you.
what's your attitude about retirement?
Well, I think of Winston Churchill on a commencement speech that he gave, and he said, never quit. And that's where I am.
That is a fact. Well, Larry, this may be a loaded question. You know, I always answer questions like this. Well, I knew a guy who, and you can do that if you want to. But can you think of the biggest mistake you've made in business and maybe what you learned from it? Did something come to mind?
Oh, it does indeed, because it hurt real badly when I ran out of money in the down real estate market. A big part of that was leverage, too. I had really come to realize that the way you could acquire so much real estate was financial leverage.
Right.
And I was in a position where I ran out of cash. And I think that was my biggest mistake. And while I say that, I see others that went through the same thing. But the problem was when the thing turned back in the right direction, the cash wasn't there to go out and reap
right.
the benefits
right.
of it. Yeah.
You know, that puts you in the same category as even somebody like Donald Trump, who also went bankrupt during a couple of times. So that does it does happen.
Right.
And sometimes no matter what's our best. Larry, how do you want to be remembered?
I want to be remembered by what we said just a few minutes ago of how many lives I impacted as I came through. I like for people to say, I remember Larry said this to me one time. That's meaningful to me.
Well, it is meaningful to you, and it's also well-deserved. I've known you a long time, and I also know a lot of other people that know you, and you do have that is people's attitude. That is your sort of your legacy in a way. Can you tell us, in the career you've had, whether in your retail career or real estate career or what you're doing with EMA now, what's been the most rewarding thing about your career? And I'm sure that's probably going to segue into your last answer there possibly, but.
Well, yeah, in fact, I feel like that through the various things that I did, and I think about, Eddie, the reason I'm working with EMA right now is at a Thursday breakfast that you and I had each morning at
right.
Chick-fil-A, you talked about some difficulty you'd had with a couple of commercial salespeople. The real estate market was down, and I said, well, Eddie, what if I did that for you?
Right.
To see how
right.
that works out.
Yep.
That's been well over 2 years ago.
Right.
That we've made that decision. And I think those relationships that we have as we go through life, I think that it has enabled me by being, I think working with EMA, working with real estate, having been in the retail business, having been in the medical building business, it has enabled me to cross career lines, job lines. I've got Chinese friends.
Right.
I've got Korean friends. I've got Indian friends, even crossing cultural lines. So it different income levels. I look at what I've been able to do in the business world, and not that I've done it, but the Lord has enabled me to establish these relationships across all these lines. And I think of something that I heard one of the former linebackers for Ohio State University say, if you were to list the differences, if we listed the things that you and I are different on, and this applies to anybody, and then you list the things that we're alike on, that list where we are alike would be much longer than the things where we're different.
But we spend so much time, don't we, talking about the differences we have with folks rather than the similarities we have with them where we can enjoy that together. Larry, you know, even you're talking about having Chinese friends and friends. That's one thing that I have to say that still sort of amazes me about our business at EMA, and I don't think it's exclusive to our business at EMA, is that with the interconnectedness, we live in exciting times, with the interconnectedness that we have today, you know, we have customers and suppliers from all over the world. And we have people on our website from all over the world every day, you know, hundreds of them. And then we are able to do business with them. You know, when I got in the business years ago, that was impossible to do, and you couldn't do that. Larry, you've been a great guest. Thanks for being on.
Well, thank you for having me, Eddie.
And since you and I are friends, we'll continue talking long after we're off the radio. You've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. Hey, catch today's program podcast on eddiemayfield.com. Go to the blog page there and read a little bit about Larry, read a little more about other guests on the program, and you'll enjoy it. Hey, we'll see you here again next Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. Goodbye. Man. He was brutally handsome. She was terminally pretty.